Does Maine have a welfare problem? In this week's State of the State address, Governor Paul LePage repeated his call for major cuts in social services in order to close what he says will be a budget shortfall of more than $220 million. Maine's welfare system, he says, is far too generous.
We have encouraged people to rely on the taxpayers rather than rely on themselves. We must stop promising people a free lunch.
What's causing this budget shortfall? And are there other ways to solve it? I'm Keith Shortall, and today we'll talk with Health and Human Services Commissioner Mary Mayhew, also in Augusta, Democratic State Senator Margaret Craven, who sits on the Appropriations Committee. Here in our Portland studios, Gordon Smith of the Maine Medical Association, Chris Hasted of Maine Equal Justice Partners, and Joel Allenbaugh of the Maine Heritage Policy Center. And we want to hear from you. This is Maine Calling. First to Augusta. Commissioner of Health and Human Services Mary Mayhew was unable to join us live today, but she did grant an interview earlier this morning with State House Bureau Chief A.J. Higgins.
Commissioner, thanks for joining us. We've heard the number $221 million as the shortfall facing us in your department. Why do we face such a shortfall in the state's Medicaid program, which we call MainCare?
What the governor is looking at is over the last 10 years, a significant growth in enrollment within the program, and yet the funding to really cover the costs of that growth in enrollment have not been there. When we see the use of stimulus funding over the last 3 years as a result of the economic stimulus package adopted by Congress, where states received enhanced federal Medicaid reimbursement, that allowed Maine to, on a temporary basis, continue to fund this size program. We have unpaid bills to the hospitals of over $400 million, state and federal. Those are indications that as the Medicaid program has grown, the legislature, the previous administrations have not adequately covered the true costs of caring for these individuals within the program.
But is Maine alone in being behind in its reimbursement payments to hospitals?
Very few states have this type of reimbursement structure where it is a prospective basis and there was a settle-up period where at the end of a year you'd come in, the hospital would submit their cost report, and then there'd be a truing up of the number of patients that truly had been served by the hospital. Most states have moved to a claims basis reimbursement where they're being paid on a real-time basis. We've done part of that. Last year, the governor moved to implement that new payment system for inpatient reimbursement for hospitals, and we will be doing the same for outpatients so that we stop this accumulation of debt and unpaid bills.
Are you not concerned that if you remove coverage for certain low-income Mainers, that they will simply take their problems into emergency rooms and shift the cost to hospitals?
Well, I want to take a step back, though, first and talk about where we are, how we got here. Yeah. This didn't happen overnight. And it is difficult to unravel the series of policy changes, decisions, one-time funding that has been used for ongoing demand within this program. This administration was presented with a biennial budget in 20 days to build on top of that our priorities. We know fundamentally that we have to reassemble this Medicaid program to make sure that we are truly meeting our priorities and the mission within the Department of Health and Human Services. So I do want to point out concerns that we have about where we are not meeting our mission. And to me, it's an example of how far off the mark the Medicaid program has gotten. And that is with developmental disabilities. We have significant waiting lists for individuals with developmental disabilities, people that we all would agree are the most vulnerable, who need and should be able to depend on state services. We have to start from the beginning and rebuild this program to ensure that we've got clear priorities for how these limited resources are being allocated. I would also say that it isn't simply an all-or-nothing equation, that we're just going to reduce Medicaid and do nothing else to identify other ways to provide affordable coverage in the main commercial health insurance market. It is the governor's commitment that we look at other opportunities to improve access to affordable health insurance coverage. The concern is, have we grown so dependent on state government that we haven't pushed to address other challenges related to affordable health insurance and affordable health care?
How about a big picture question? Is this debate about saving money or about redefining who should qualify for government assistance?
We are faced today with a significant financial crisis. We run out of money in April. You cannot simply reduce rates of reimbursement within the Medicaid program to resolve this problem and this challenge. You cannot manage your way out of this program with greater restrictions on utilization. This is today about the number of people being served on this program. We cannot continue to have a program of this size and scope. The state government cannot afford it. We have to look at other ways, again, to provide affordable health insurance coverage in the commercial health insurance market and reduce the dependency on the Medicaid program. It cannot be viewed as another health insurance option in the marketplace.
Now, opponents of the governor's plan point to statistics that say 5% of main care enrollees account for more than one half of the program's cost, and that part of the answer should come from better management of that 5%.
We are looking very closely at those individuals, although I will say that within that 5%, we are talking largely about individuals with developmental disabilities, elderly individuals in long-term care settings, and those suffering from severe and persistent mental illness. So when we look at those spending patterns, we need to understand what is impactable of that spending. Where can we reduce unnecessary spending or avoidable healthcare spending? Within that group, that will be a challenge. Clearly, in the last biennial budget, the legislature spent a great deal of time talking about managed care management to improve the utilization of healthcare services. They have already booked significant savings that we are expected to achieve in state fiscal year 13, which starts this July. We have begun a process of launching our initiative under the umbrella of value-based purchasing. A core part of that is managing our high-cost users, especially overutilization of the emergency department. That is critical to the long-term management of the program, but also to improve health outcomes for those within the program.
Commissioner Mary Mayhew, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And that was State House Bureau Chief A.J. Higgins, who spoke earlier today with Maine Commissioner of Health and Human Services Mary Mayhew. I'm Keith Shortall. This is Maine Calling. Now live to the State House, we welcome Democratic State Senator Margaret Craven of Lewiston, who sits on the legislature's Appropriations Committee. Senator, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here. Actually, I serve on Health and Human Services.
Oh, you do? I apologize about
that.
That's
fine.
Is this you've just heard the interview with the commissioner? Is this debate over the main care program about numbers? Is it a math problem or is it a philosophy problem and about ideology?
Well, it may be all of the above. I think that we have a healthcare problem here in Maine and a priorities problem. And we're always in a mode of scarcity, and we are burdening our children and our seniors with this burden. And, you know, she talks about enrollment, but really, the real truth is about enrollment is that since 2006, from 2006 to 2011, we've only had an 8.9% in expenditures over a five-year period. And that includes all of the time that we've spent in the recession. And so I think that a lot of the problem and a lot of the problems, even though we have never really confirmed what the shortfall is yet, because because the OFPR was not able to confirm that. But for example, 29.9 million dollars of the shortfall is a result of the new claim system. And there was also a problem with doing, projections for costs of the services last year. And I think that having senior citizens and having children and people in PMIs and other folks who need health care having to carry this burden is really too bad.
What about
and scary, dangerous.
Yeah. What about the commissioner's, I think, was talking a bit about the sins of the past, if you will, in which she was explaining that the state had used federal stimulus money to expand Maine care. Is that your view? And if so, was that wise in retrospect, knowing that that would come to an end at some point?
We knew when we got that stimulus money that we were going to lose it. That was very, very clear. And we used that money to keep people employed, to keep paying our bills, and to pay off the hospitals because we owed them money at that time. And we all knew that it would be painful afterwards trying to fill in the hole that that left. We were hoping at that time that the economy would have recovered enough to be able to pay our own homemade bills. But that money that came into Maine at that time was a lifesaver. It was a lifesaver for our senior citizens who get the Medicare offset programs paid, and for school programs, and for nursing homes, and for everybody else that receives a hand up.
But might not it be time to look at least at, if not the governor's plan for changing eligibility for some 65,000 Mainers? Could we not look at it, though, and maybe revisit the eligibility to some degree and maybe cut back on it a little bit given our financial situation?
Absolutely. We should keep looking at it every year, as we have for the past 10 years that I've been here. We've cut and cut and looked and looked. And as far as eligibility goes, I think that it's so important, and I am very, very proud of our standing regarding the health care that we provide here in Maine. We're eighth in the country as the healthiest state. We're the oldest. We're the poorest. And this is an economic development supporter. And if we lose If the governor's budget gets passed and we lose over $1 billion into our economy, we are going to be losing jobs, over 4,400 jobs. I have two hospitals in my district that are beside themselves with worry because they're going to be losing a lot of money and there's going to be a lot of layoffs. And besides that, they're going to have to do charity care. You know, people's illnesses are not going to go away. People's needs are not going to go away. It's just going to be moved somewhere else, to the jails or to the emergency rooms or to wherever it is that our most vulnerable end up.
If this number, this $221 million number, is even in doubt, could you give us what number you think that we're really looking at and what would be your prescription for covering it?
Well, I think that a lot of people, including providers, are working, and I am committed to a two-thirds budget. There's no doubt in my mind about that. One of the things that I would propose, and I think I will go to the dreaded word, and that is the tax word. And I think that taxes are usually cut in order to stimulate the economy and to stimulate job growth. But in this case, as I've talked to businesses in my community and especially my hospitals, that this is not a time to be making tax cuts for the very wealthiest. And the wealthy is people who earn over $177,000 a year. You know, when I was a young person, I was raising my children, and I come from a blue-collar family. The real truth is that we didn't have a lot of income, but we had 100% health care coverage. And I didn't have to worry about my kids. I didn't have to worry about losing my house. I didn't have to worry about getting sick. And if I get a little tax break, which would probably amount to $2 a year or $4 or something like that, I wouldn't even notice it. But by God, if I lost my health care, I would notice that. And so would a lot of my constituents who are calling me and saying, I have cancer, or my husband has cancer, or my husband has Parkinson's. What am I going to do if I lose my health care? These are non-categorical adults who have illnesses and who are not able to work. And it's scary, and it's dangerous, and it's cruel.
All right. Democratic Senator Margaret Craven, a member of the legislature's Health and Human Services Committee, we'll get that right, live from the State House. Senator, thanks so much for joining us today.
I'm delighted. Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, send us an email, talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, post a comment on our Facebook page, and while you're there, friend us, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
This week on Maine Watch, the debate over Maine's energy future. Governor LePage believes in the free market for bringing down power costs in Maine. At the same time, a coalition of environmentalists and industry is pushing a renewable energy referendum. What's best for the state? That's our discussion. Plus, we check in with economic forecaster Charlie Colgan and find out why he is more pessimistic than this time last year. We hope you'll join us for Maine Watch.
Maine Watch tonight at 8 and tomorrow night at 9 on MPBN television, as well as tomorrow afternoon at 12:30 here on MPBN Radio. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN members' support and by the Clean Bedroom, organic bedding showroom in Kittery, helping Mainers sleep healthy since 2004, now in Portland at Furnitura and online at thecleanbedroom.com, and by BizCompass, a Maine company dedicated to maximizing privacy and versatility of business information systems using its private cloud, online at bizcompass.net, and by Portland Ovations, presenting China's Golden Dragon Acrobats at 7 p.m. on Friday, March 9th at Merrill Auditorium, portlandovations.org.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today, the subject is Maine Care. My guests here in the studio in Portland, Joel Allenbaugh, Healthcare Policy Director for the Maine Heritage Policy Center, Chris Hastett, Public Policy Director at Maine Equal Justice Partners, and Gordon Smith, Executive Vice President for the Maine Medical Association. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Tweet @MaineCalling or post a comment or question on our Facebook page. Gordon Smith, to you. You represent physicians all over the state of Maine. What's the Maine Medical Association's position in this debate?
Well, we're virtually against all the cuts proposed. We don't think it's reasonable to look only at the Maine Care budget to make these cuts. Even if you're a business person, why would you go to the one place where when you spend a dollar, you have a willing partner that gives you an additional dollar and 72 cents to match that? So that when we don't just lose a dollar, we're losing almost $3. And secondly, we have universal access in this state to care. Unfortunately, it's offered through the emergency rooms. So just because the people don't have coverage, we would avoid anything that makes people uninsured. Our highest priority is to get people covered by a private or a public plan. And to actually move tens of thousands of people to the rolls of the uninsured doesn't mean that they're not going to get sick. They're going to get sick. They're going to access the system through the emergency room. That's the highest cost setting. You and I will pay for it in our higher health insurance premiums, which are already in Maine arguably the highest in the world. So it simply makes no sense.
Joel Allenbaugh, I wondered if you have a chance to respond to many of the points. It's a big subject here. But first, the penny-wise and pound-foolish argument that this isn't going to go away. It's simply shifting the cost elsewhere.
Well, it could, but I think you know, you asked a question earlier whether this was a math issue or a funding issue or whether it was a philosophical issue, and I think it's a combination of both. I mean, the reality is there isn't enough money to pay the bills that we've promised to pay. And you've got a situation where we simply can't do everything for everyone. So you have to look at it systemically, I think, and try to identify where can we make this program work for the long haul. And I think there's a lot of places to go. I think there's an assumption that if somebody comes off of Medicaid that they become uninsured. Well, that's an assumption, but it's not necessarily a fact. I mean, a lot of the folks over the last couple of decades who have moved onto the Medicaid rolls, many have come from private plans. So if you can look at strategies to bring people back to the private plans, it's actually an improvement for a hospital or for a provider. I think any of them would agree they would rather have a private insurance reimbursement rate when they deliver care to a patient rather than have an underpayment, if you will, through Medicaid or Medicare even.
Chris Hested, can the private sector step in and be part of the solution of the shortfall, or what's your take?
Certainly not in the immediate future. Certainly not when these cuts are intended to go into place. We're talking – let's think for a minute about who we're talking about. The largest group that are proposed to be cut in this budget are a group of very poor adults with incomes under the poverty level. That's just under $11,000 a year. I don't know of any plan that is available to a group of people that poor that is affordable under the circumstances. And many of these folks are not even able to work. They may not be disabled in the sense that Social Security considers a disability, but they certainly have very serious conditions. You know, more than 500 have cancer. A couple thousand have diabetes. More than 4,000 have serious mental illness. And so we're not talking about a group of people that are able to be employed by employers who offer private health insurance, and if they are, where it's affordable.
Let's go to the phones, and Ted is calling from Piscataquis. Hi, Ted. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. Just a couple of points. I provide face-to-face crisis work in one of the poorest areas in the state of Maine. It would be an abomination to cut some of these people out of the Maine care system, number one. Number two, your speaker that said that private health care would pick this up is absolutely right. They're not going to pick up something that loses that much money. And three, the reality of it is you can only go so many places and not have to make a payment. And an emergency room is that. Your concern about hospitals and charity care, emergency rooms are going to become de facto primary care physicians. And I think we're just headed for a disaster if all of this comes to fruition. And I'll take my comment off the air.
Okay. Thank you for your call. Ted, to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Joel Allenbaugh, we're hearing from an ER worker there saying, you know, this is a real concern.
Well, one comment he made was that a private insurance company wouldn't take on that risk, and that's absolutely false. This is a guarantee issue state. An insurance company has no choice. They'll take anyone who comes and applies for coverage. There are also things called short-term medical policies that are much more affordable that could be an appropriate bridge for some folks in those circumstances. But, you know, there are many people who have great needs, and I don't think there's any argument there. But I think we have to come back to what Commissioner Mayhew said, which is we've ballooned a program beyond what we have the ability to afford. There's no way to move back to a sustainable model without having some difficulty in that transition. I think we have to be as thoughtful as we can in that process, but we can't ignore the fact that we're talking about these level of shortfalls. It's sort of the equivalence of sticking our head in the sand. We still have an underlying problem here that obviously has to be solved.
Chris, what's the solution if not cutting these eligibility and cutting people out of the system? We must be talking about taxes.
Well, let me try to answer that question in two ways. First of all, I think the most important thing to remember when we're trying to solve this problem is that it's a healthcare cost problem we're trying to solve, not a Medicaid problem. We don't have a Medicaid crisis in this program. Medicaid is not immune from the cost pressures that are on the health care system in this country that we all know the story about, we're trying to solve. And so we've got to approach it in that way. And so the way in which we need to approach it first is to better manage that care, more aggressively manage that care, more carefully manage that care to get both cost savings in the short run and better outcomes. Now, the commissioner has talked about what they are doing, and they are doing, making some steps in this direction. But in our view, they're not doing enough. For example, everybody recognizes, and your caller recognized, that the hospital emergency room is where a bunch of these folks are going to land up. The hospital emergency room, unfortunately, is a place where people who are very sick and uninsured go, and people on Medicaid go too. But the initiative proposed by the department is for, on a hospital-by-hospital basis, to manage about 20 of those people a year. In the previous administration, many, many more people who were chronic users of the emergency room because of their health conditions and because of their lack of care management were being averted from the emergency room. So we think there's significant more work to do there. We think there are a number of lessons we can learn from Medicare, which is starting to manage that program more effectively by looking at preventable hospital readmissions and infections that people get when in the hospital. So we think we can be more aggressive and garner more savings in the short term. But let's go to the other question. This question and the problem that's raised, as Gordon points out, by the budget being considered in this supplemental in one department alone puts legislators in a position where they really have to choose which group of people to cut rather than looking on a budget-wide basis. What are our priorities really? And so, for example, when we're talking about the harshest of cuts, putting seniors and people with disabilities and very sick people on the street or getting their care in the emergency room, is that less of a priority than giving a tax break to the wealthiest people in this state who can afford to contribute more to their needs?
Joel Allenbaugh, this is a huge chunk of the budget. So why not maybe look in other departments to maybe cover some of the shortfalls in this Health and Human Services?
Well, you have to realize that the Medicaid budget is a huge percentage of that budget. And then you have education, which is the other most significant component. I mean, where do you go? You know, there's no other place in the budget you can find the kind of savings that are needed. And it's the program itself which is under the shortfalls. I mean, there was a discussion about 5% of the folks within Medicaid producing over 50% of the costs, and that's absolutely true. And I think it's true in any insurance pool. And I don't disagree with what Chris is saying about having to go at these different components systemically and try to figure out how to deliver care less expensively. One area would be looking at long-term care services. That is an enormously expensive delivery system, really for a place where very few seniors ever want to find themselves. So there are a lot of things that I think we need to be looking at, but a lot of these things are going to be long-term in creating savings when we have a short-term problem.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Let's get the perspective of another ER staffer. Irene is joining us from Wells. Hi, Irene.
Hi. I have some comments, and basically my question is about specifics on eligibility for getting on welfare, because on a daily basis I see young people where their only goal is to get on welfare, and they're looking for any kind of diagnosis that will let them be able to get on welfare. And although there are needs for people with developmental disabilities, and I see that when they talk about making, budget cuts, it's like they make budget cuts in the wrong area. They cut for case managers of people who are deaf and with developmental disabilities versus people who are trying to get a depression diagnosis so that they can get on welfare and not have to work.
How do you know that their goal is to get on welfare? Do they tell that to you?
They readily admit it. They readily admit that that's what they're looking to do because they don't want to work and they don't believe in work. And I work in a psychiatric setting, so they're readily talking about those kind of stressors in their life, and they readily admit that that is their goal.
Gordon Smith, let me bring you in here. Do you hear this from docs around the state?
Well, there's some the people are concerned about some anecdotal information about abuse of the system, but we don't consider Medicaid to be welfare. I appreciated the editorial in the Bangor Daily News today that made that point. For instance, why would we consider, you know, these payments to physicians and hospitals on behalf of a low-income person to be welfare, but the fact that I probably have a $20,000 health insurance policy with Anthem that my employer does not have to include in my taxable income, that those millions of dollars, we don't, at least most people don't call that welfare. Why is, if one's welfare, then so is the other. Medicaid is not to us welfare. You don't go on it because you never have to work again. We're trying to pay for people's health care. And I just want to go back. It is completely unrealistic in this state, which has low incomes and the highest health insurance premiums in the world. Again, family policies ranging from $16,000 to $25,000. Listen to what Chris said. Talk about the numbers and the math in a state where the average, I think, person makes maybe $34,000, where the poverty level is like $11,000. These people are going to, trust me, they're going to be uninsured. They're not going to buy and cannot buy, can't even come close to buying a private health insurance policy in the state of Maine. It was a good deal for the state to take those federal dollars and have these people have Maine care coverage rather than just shifting that cost to our already high private health insurance premiums.
Joel Allenbaugh, would you like to respond quickly?
Yeah, I mean, anecdotal. I don't think there's a person I've ever spoken to that doesn't have an anecdote. We all know that there are many people who are multi-generational on these programs, and it absolutely is welfare. There are people who have gone generation after generation after generation who absolutely try not to work. And there are folks that I deal with on a daily basis in my insurance practice that have those discussions with me and say, well, I don't want to take this plan that's paid for by my employer because I have a deductible. I'd rather go here and take this one because everything is covered for free for me. So I don't think that the system as a whole is simply people who are abusing it, but I don't think we can ignore that there is certainly a culture of folks within this state who are using that system and crowding out those funds for the people who truly need that safety net.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
Intelligence Squared U.S. tackles America's critical issues.
Our motion is the U.N. should admit Palestine as a full member state.
An act which will create chaos, precisely at a time when the Middle East is more dangerous than ever.
Supporting our right to be admitted to the United Nations will be sending the right message, the message of respect for human rights.
That's Intelligence Squared on NPR.
Intelligence Squared this afternoon at 1.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, American energy. President Obama says we're going to become an energy power again. Is he right? And how clean will that energy be? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Tune in for On Point tonight at midnight.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. Today on the program, we're talking about Maine Care and the state budget. And it's a big topic. And we have a lot of guests today. Joel Allenbaugh, Healthcare Policy Director for the Maine Heritage Policy Center. Chris Hasted, Public Policy Director at Maine Equal Justice Partners. And Gordon Smith, Executive Vice President for the Maine Medical Association. And we want to bring in some callers, too. Ellen joins us from Ellsworth. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, I'm right here. My question is about the Fund for a Healthy Maine. Much of that money has been added to this budget, I assume, as a stopgap measure to fill in some of the holes. I know of a wonderful program, the Maine Home Visiting Program, that addresses some of the problems we've been talking about here today. For instance, the use of the ER. The Maine Home Visiting Program goes to great lengths to encourage its clients to not use the ER, to use their primary care physician. It's also a program that addresses domestic violence, which I know is near and dear to the governor's heart. And this is a program that saves a lot of money through prevention rather than intervention. And I'm concerned that we haven't talked much about the Fund for a Healthy Maine and what's going to happen to these programs if the governor's budget goes through. And I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris Hasted, Fund for a Healthy Maine. Is this really a critical program? Does it work? Do prevention programs pay off?
Yes, is the simple answer. I think Maine can be really proud of what it did with its tobacco settlement money a decade ago. It invested those dollars in the kinds of programs that Ellen's talking about that have both an immediate and enduring effect on cost in the healthcare system. Its efforts with respect to tobacco use have been dramatic in this state. And similarly with the program that Ellen talks about, I think that it is it's another example of exactly the way not to solve the problem of healthcare cost in this state.
Gordon Smith, do doctors support that program and do not want to see it defunded?
We completely support it. We've supported it for a decade. Dr. McAfee led off the press conference yesterday morning talking about the fund. This proposal would take about half the money. It's ironic. I mean, the Maine Care program pays about $216 million a year in costs associated with tobacco use. So, you know, it's ironic. That's actually the amount of money we're looking for in the two-year budget. To take that money is penny-wise and pound-foolish in the opinion of Maine's physicians.
Joel Ellenbaugh, is this a program we can afford to cut back on?
You know, I know a lot of the folks who work within the program, and I think there are a lot of folks that do good work around the state. The numbers I've heard are different, however. My understanding is that the tobacco rates have not really budged at all in the state over the last decade or so, so I'd be curious to see those. But I think, you know, I think one thing that we're all sort of bouncing around a little bit that is the core issue here is we have an issue with the cost of health care. And the cost of healthcare in Maine is driven by our delivery system, which is inefficient, which is oftentimes not effective, certainly not satisfying for patients, and it impacts us in the private insurance market, and it impacts us here within the Medicaid system as well. That's certainly the area that we need to be focusing on.
I need to correct Joel's numbers on the. In fact, there's been a significant, dramatic, almost decrease in particularly youth smoking. From rates that were in the low 30s 10 years ago to down in the low teens today. So these approaches have been successful.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Let's go to Steve in Orono. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Yeah, I guess as time goes on, we're going to find out that former Governor McKernan not only was a good governor, he also was a great humanitarian, and he understood. And I think he would maybe agree, I do agree with the bishop of the Catholic Church, that when he was one of the first people to testify that this is a moral issue. And you can paint it and you can spin it all you want. We have part-time legislators who get full-time health benefits, full-time premier pension programs, but we can't take care of people who sometimes for 30 or 40 years have paid into the system and now need a help in a safety net. I think it's a disgrace. I think you can put it any way you want. We allow, you might not want to call it welfare, but we give some of the largest big box stores in the country, Fortune 500 companies, billions of profits so they can pass their cost of not paying a living wage, not paying benefits. So the state of Maine has to pick up LIHEAP, food stamps, and health care. And there's money in the system. I get a kick out of people referencing the Medicaid system. The largest single-payer health care provider in the country is the VA and the Medicaid and Medicare. And they're going in a totally different direction than the commercial insurance industry. There's money in the system. We just choose to use a political battlefield on this, and it's a disgrace.
Steve, would you support increasing taxes in some way?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
1% on a sales tax, and we're willing to put people out in the street, or potentially they could die because we want to fulfill some type of political promise to people that bought their way into the governor's house. You know, come on.
Steve, thanks for calling. Joel Allenbaugh, Steve, I think, represents a certain passionate point of view within Maine about that this really is a moral question. It's not an accounting question. It's a moral question. How do you respond to that?
I think to a certain extent it is. We have a moral obligation to have an adequate safety net for those who are most needy in our society. Our problem is that we've expanded this program beyond those who are just the most needy, and now we simply can't afford it. Raising taxes is an amazing answer to me. I think we just heard earlier in the segment about you reduce taxes in order to stimulate the economy to generate more revenue. If we raise taxes further in this state, we'll continue the economic depression that we have here and result in less funds, not more funds.
Chris Hestad, Maine voters did elect Republicans to the legislature and a Republican governor largely on their message of please stop taxing us. So you can understand that there is a fairly loud point of view that that taxes are not the answer right now.
I don't think that's a one-size-fits-all message from the voters. I think that when Joel talks about, you know, we can't afford to help people who aren't the neediest, this budget cuts health care from 500 people who have cancer right now, from thousands of people with mental illness, thousands of people with diabetes. These are people, thousands of people living in residences because they are older or disabled and can't live on their own. Those are people that we need on the basis of a moral imperative to take care of. And that's why the bishop and his representative, that's why the bishop's representative was at the press conference Gordon talked about yesterday, saying we have to choose our priorities correctly. We have to save this coverage, and we support taking dollars away that haven't even been given yet in this biennial budget to the very highest people who are earning $700,000-$800,000 a year. That is a moral question, and I think most Maine people would answer that on the side of the healthcare choice.
And to some extent, the crisis, Keith, is manufactured. They gave away the money in the last budget. Most people don't even know they've got this tax cut coming in July. And if they just took two steps, if they postponed it, they wouldn't have to cancel the tax cut, repeal it, just postpone that a few months, as well as raise the cigarette tax. And the majority of Maine people in every polling that we've ever done shows that they support a cigarette tax. Those two acts alone could preserve this care.
We have 2 minutes left, less than that. Jessica is in Saco. Jessica, what's your question? Quickly, please.
Well, I just think that the talk about a moral issue is important to really look at whether it's a political issue or if it's a family moral issue. And I think that when we decide to fund something, no matter what it is in life, we are making a political and philosophical stance on that. I work in the mental health realm of the world, and I see day in and day out, people who are struggling, but I also see people who are abusing the system. And it's always my job to help them get off of that system, to help work myself out of a job.
Jessica, we're running out of time. I appreciate the call. Joel Allenbaugh, you have the last word here.
I'm challenged to understand how we're going to raise money by taxing cigarettes, who are purchased by some of the lowest income folks in the state, when we're trying to make them stop smoking to begin with.
We're out of time. Thank you, all of you. We could keep going for an hour here. Joel Allenbaugh is Health Care Policy Director for the Maine Heritage Policy Center, Chris Hestad, Public Policy Director at Maine Equal Justice Partners, and Gordon Smith, Executive Vice President for the Maine Medical Association. Thanks to you all. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Lindsay Maynard ran the board. Our volunteer Cindy Hahn answered your calls. We also had help from A.J. Higgins, John Bradford, Rich Tozier, and the MPBN web team. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.